Empowerment Through Knowledge Publishing and Serena Stone present The Tequila Drinker's Guide to Health and Wellness Radio Hour with your host, author, and medical Qigong educator, Serena Stone. Featuring the director of the Universal Healing Tao and author of dozens of books on natural health and longevity, Tao Master Montauk Chia. This show is for all of us who work hard and play hard. Those of us who are willing to try new things to improve their life and those who will not tolerate victimization as an answer to health and wellness issues. Welcome back, listeners, to the second season of The Tequila Drinker's Guide to Health and Wellness. This is Episode 1. On today's episode, Serena interviews medical Qigong educator and White Tiger Qigong Schoolmaster instructor Tevye Fung about the history of medical Qigong. Don't miss this interview with Master Montauk Chia's fascinating friend.
Well, hey guys, and welcome back. Master Chia is on tour for quite some time, so for the next few months, a favorite educator of his and the founder of White Tiger Qigong School and a master in his own right, Tevye Fung, and I are going to spend a little time demystifying ancient Chinese secrets and really talking about why we advocate medical Qigong and why we think it should be brought to people like you, to everybody, to make a difference in a positive way for our health and our mental state. And I see Tevye coming now. Hi, Tevye.
Hey, Serena.
All right. So we're just going to be sitting around here in Tao Garden. You're going to hear dishes clanging and birds chirping, and maybe you'll hear somebody walk by. We're just hanging out in Tao Garden. And Tevye, we're going to be offering folks some information now for the next few months. So I hope you have a lot of stuff in your head.
Oh, happy to be here and happy to talk about Qigong and talk about it all day long.
So let's go right into it. Just last night, I was hanging out with some friends. Mm-hmm. And what came up, you know, these are people that like me, but they're not studying, okay? And what came up is that it's pretty airy-fairy, you know, very mystical, and you see movies with guys flying through the air and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, looking at people going, "Wah!" and then your throat explodes or your heart breaks or whatever they're doing. I want to get into a little bit about how that got started, and I happen to know you're the guy that knows more history than I do, so you take the mic.
Well, first, if we really want to understand what is Qigong, we have to look at the history of Qigong to really grasp it. And actually, Qigong was only really started to be widely used around the time of the Communist Revolution, around 1949.
I love the clothes in the 40s. Keep going.
And that's Mao Zedong came into power. Mao Zedong led the Communist Revolution. And at that time, he believed in Qigong because some of the other members of the party, of the Communist Party, were healed by Qigong. But the Communist Party wanted to take out the spirituality out of anything. So they wanted to make Qigong sort of a science.
Well, wasn't the religion of China, it's Buddhism, right?
Well, actually, they say Buddhism was imported. The original religion of China is actually Taoism. Buddhism, they say, came from India.
Oh, boy. Okay, so let's go back to your story. So they wanted to take all the religion or spirituality out of it?
Yep, they were doing that with everything. They were doing, because what Mao Zedong wanted to do is clean any connection to anything spiritual, religious in China. And why is that? That's because the Chinese were being invaded by Western powers. You had America, France, England, Japan, and they were all invading China at that time. And Mao Zedong saw that his country was about to be dominated by Western powers. So he realized he needed to have a strategy that was very extreme. And he saw that the Chinese were very soft and warm and accepting, and he needed to completely shift their reality. So what he did is he created that Cultural Revolution. Now, it created havoc in China and was pretty much a devastating event in Chinese history. And what it did is it wiped clean a lot of their connection to their ancient culture. So he burned tea plantations. He forbade many practices, ancient Chinese practices. Martial artists, Qigong masters, they fled and were either murdered or put in prison. And many fled into the mountains or to other countries.
What, because they were viewed as people who'd attained their gifts through some sort of spiritual connection?
Well, yeah, it had a connection to the culture, number one. That's why they call it Cultural Revolution. He was trying to eliminate their connection to the culture, which, in fact, he was actually using an ancient book called the I Ching, which is the Book of Changes. In English, we call it I Ching a lot. And that book he used for his strategy of war. He also used Sun Tzu in The Art of War. So, to make a long story short, he went on this rampage and started to cut the connection. But then Qigong started to come back. Now, during Deng Xiaoping's era, he was the next president after Mao Zedong. Deng Xiaoping promoted Qigong, whereas Deng Xiaoping promoted business, okay? Because Mao Zedong was against business because he was a communist, and then Deng Xiaoping was still under communist rule, but he promoted business. You know, he founded this city called Shenzhen, which became now it's the entrepreneurial capital of China, just about.
Wait, so now we're out of the 40s, we're into the 50s.
Yeah.
Ladies, ducktails on the guys, black leather jackets, we love it, poodle skirts, okay. Now we're getting into pretty modern times, okay? And Mao is out, but he facilitated pretty huge change. Yeah. And I'm sorry, but as a woman sitting here, you know, the yin portion of our show, that sounds horrible.
Yeah. Oh, millions of people died. They had re-education programs. They had a lot of famous Qigong masters were put into these quote-unquote re-education camps to rehabilitate them so they wouldn't be believing in these fairy tale beliefs. Okay, so Deng Xiaoping came into power and he then promoted Qigong. He promoted business. But they still wanted to keep any type of connection to spirituality out of it and keep it a science. So he began to classify any sort of supernatural power as Qigong. And so later, all these quacks started coming out and they were trying to gain popularity and they were saying like they could cook with their hands, they could cook meat with their hands, they could heal people just without touching them and they were making fortunes doing it. And what happened is some institutions started debunking and demystifying and saying these guys are actually liars, they're con artists. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people started thinking Qigong is some mystical thing. But they just started
mystical thing, and with some really heavy connotations here.
Yes.
I mean, you could die.
Yeah.
Well, under Mao's rule, and now now you could be a charlatan.
Yes, and Qigong went through these massive waves of rising and falling and changing. It was changing so significantly, and people's viewpoints of what Qigong is was changing so significantly during this time. And groups started forming. People were getting rich. And there was coffers to be filled. Now it's said that a lot of these Chinese government officials now kept a slew of Chinese Qigong masters at their helm, so that they could, because they were able to teach them exercises to heal. Now these exercises are actually originally called Dao Yin. So Dao Yin really means guiding and pulling. And Dao Yin is really the category within Qigong. If we really want to get specific, Dao Yin is the category within Qigong that refers to the actual physical exercises in relationship to the practice of Qigong.
Okay. So they had, so even in, are you talking modern day, like 50s, 60s, that whole time,
yeah.
They actually had like a secret, so they were doing Qigong at a certain level because they knew they were safe.
Yeah.
They weren't going to get hurt. Right.
Right.
And, but they're not going to share it.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is that lovely sound?
That's the blender.
That's
someone's having a smoothie.
Oh, someone's having a smoothie. Bar. Hello, juice bar. All right. Okay. So, they knew the people in power, they knew the difference between a charlatan and the real deal, and they were using it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when Qigong was promoted by the Chinese government, we have to understand how the communist operation works. So they put these people, what's called danwei, that means unit. So in a unit that consisted of, say, a factory, which also consisted of all the people that lived in that community and the government officials and spokesmen that lived there too. And these were units. Okay. So people in China lived in these sort of enclaves, so to speak, at that time.
Okay.
So when you think of the Soviets, you know, and communist Russia, it's very closed off. So you have these closed off individual societies all over China. But then they would spread from unit to unit about promoting what the government wanted to promote.
Okay.
So that's how they made Qigong really popular, because it was a way that people were getting better and they were healing without spending a lot of money.
Okay. In my country, I think that would be great.
Yeah.
Because we're having some issues right now with healthcare.
Well, yeah, without going into too much detail, there's a lot of powers that don't want you to have access to natural healing modalities.
Well, it's a little hard to make money selling medicine if you don't need it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enough said. We don't take sides here.
So back to the story is... then along came this massive healing movement using Qigong. And this movement was called the Falun Gong.
Yeah, a lot of us have heard about that.
Now, Falun Gong had 100 million Chinese at its peak practicing this Qigong. And it was government officials were doing it. The elite were using it. Professors at universities were using it. And because people were getting great, profound healing effects from it. Okay. But what happened is the leader of Falun Gong, he decided that he was going to get political. And that's when it took a turn for the worse. So he started creating sort of a sect-like, cult-like following, claiming he was the master of this sect, and he would start to tell people how to behave morally. And he started speaking out politically. Big mistake. And at first, the Communist Party couldn't fight him because they had their own members of the Communist Party practicing. So it was a tricky subject. But Jiang Zemin at the time, the president there, he decided that if the world saw what was happening, that the Falun Gong was actually, because they were starting to protest against the Chinese government and arranging thousands of people to do Qigong at the same time to overthrow the government, that he decided that he was going to clamp down. And that's when a major war started between the Communist Party and the Falun Gong. And obviously the Falun Gong lost, and that leader fled to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I don't get political, so I won't go much further than that.
Okay.
But that is how, then at that point, a lot of people became scared to be associated with Qigong.
Yeah.
So Qigong started actually, so as we say yin and yang, is if we reach one extreme, the opposite extreme will happen. So Qigong reached this massive, massive popular stage with 100 million practicing, and it flipped. And then hardly anybody practiced after that because they were scared. They didn't want to be associated with
Qigong. Well, and rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely.
When people were disappearing. I mean, I can't speak for all of our listeners, but for a lot of us, we saw tons of news reports, things on Facebook telling us, not so much lately, but years ago, masters fleeing China, people disappearing because they were doing, you know, what looked like Tai Chi in the park. I mean, it was pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And actually, I can tell you for a fact that Del Garden here hosted a few masters that needed to leave.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Needed to leave.
This, I haven't heard anything about it for a while. So where are we at now?
Where are we at now is, as China's new government has gotten into power, they've started to open up the country, and they really want to bring back the culture, actually. So they're actually promoting Chinese culture, and within that, Qigong is an integral part of Chinese culture. So I have to give credit to, you know, people might say bad things, but I have to give credit to them that they're actually, you know, allowing people to come out and practice and encouraging it and promoting it. Now, they promote Tai Chi primarily and Ba Duan Jing, which is the eight pieces of Brosad, five animals, which is another form. So they're promoting specific forms, but there's so many forms. And now people are allowed to come up. But the thing is a lot of these older masters still have these memories of what happened because it's not so long ago that this happened. So they're scared to, some of them are scared to come out still because they don't, they have this fear that maybe it will happen again.
Right. I was going to say, it's pretty normal for a human being to say, this has happened before, it could happen again. But from your perspective, and you speak fluent Chinese, you're living in Asia, running around Asia, what do you think? You think we're safe?
I feel totally safe. I wouldn't get involved in any sort of political groups at all. Absolutely not.
Well, that wasn't very Tao. But with all due respect to the gentleman who started that, it's not very Tao to take this very natural art and let's go ahead and, you know, stampede the government with it.
A lot of people viewed him as quite manipulative. And actually, Falun Gong roots come from Shaolin, which is actually a Buddhist origin. So it had no relationship with Taoism, actually.
Hmm.
So that brings us into the modern age. And here we are now. Are there people who have mystical powers? Yes. Absolutely, there's people who can light fires with their hands. It's been documented and filmed. Is this what I practice? No.
And is it really mystical?
Is it really mystical? It's a lot of practice.
I was just going to say, I've seen some stuff too. And let's face it, if either one of us just focused on this one thing a lot, I mean, like for 20 years, we would probably be mystical too.
Absolutely.
And frankly, I've heard people talk about you and they think the way you move or, you know, certain things that you know or that you're capable of, your understanding when you touch a body because you do medical Qigong, you understand why certain things are happening in their body. That could be perceived as, no, it's really.
No, I'm laughing because people actually think it's mystical because it's just experience and doing the same practice for so many years, it just becomes second nature and you can recognize patterns because you've worked out when you're doing this type of practice, you start to feel the patterns within your own body. And then by teaching others, you can start to see their patterns. So you can recognize imbalances fairly quickly. And when you understand the human body and how it really works, you can see these patterns. So for some people, they might see that as some type of superpower, but it's really just recognizing patterns of years and years of experience.
Exactly. For folks that don't know, one of the things I'm really good at, because I've put a couple decades now of practice into it, is the Qine Song, the abdominal massage. I mean, I literally just came from giving a friend a treatment, and it does look mystical because there's a certain thing I see in everybody, every physical body. If they have had a trauma that's pretty heavy and they still don't feel safe, they still live in fear or anger. There's a thing, and I'm not going to say what it is just yet, but we're going to talk about it as our weeks go by. There's a thing I find in everybody that has a wall between them and the rest of the world out of, you know, to be safe. And so I know that if I just test this place, if I feel the thickness, We start touching and talking about, you know, so, you know, why would you have a wall around the core of your being? And the pictures come, da-da-da-da. And they have, it feels like a pretty spiritual experience to some people if they are spiritual. Mm-hmm. At the very least, it feels deeply and profoundly emotional, mm-hmm. like a conversation they wouldn't have, you know, under normal circumstances. Now, for me, after they unwind that stuff and, you know, spend some time just taking a look at what's been screwing up their life. Can you say that on the radio? I think so. Then for them, it's like this mystical experience because they look different. They feel different. Their blood and cerebral spinal fluid is flowing totally different. You literally look younger after a treatment like that, and it kind of sticks. Mm-hmm. It looks mystical. So I have this amazing reputation. But one of the reasons I wanted to do these weeks or a few months with you is because it's not. I am just like everybody else. There's nothing mystical mm-hmm. about it. It's anatomy, physiology, yeah. and understanding energy.
Yes.
If energy vibrates at a low enough frequency or vibration, it actually can become solid matter, tiny little pieces that get stuck in your tissues, and you have this thickness that no doctor can explain. You just have to understand that stuff. And I know that you do, and you actually do on a level that's different than mine, because I didn't study so much anatomy. I think the truth is I kind of cheated on the test. So my stuff is a little more intuitive, and that's why I was really fascinated to have the Jung aspect. You know your stuff. And it's, yeah, okay, I think there's some stuff that I still think is a little mystical out there, and that's fun. I'm mm-hmm. not going to take that away from my consciousness. But for the most part, especially for you guys out there, our listeners, Tevye and I have pretty strong feelings about demystifying some of this stuff.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like I said, people talk about you on occasion, like, oh, we just touched this and did that, and poof, big shift, big change. It feels like a spiritual experience to have that tension that was with us for so long we didn't even realize was making us feel bad mm-hmm. go away. Mm-hmm. It feels spiritual, but we're going to spend the next few months explaining how spirituality is a good thing. It's fine, but that's not what we're going to talk about.
Right.
We're going to make this real physical. All right. We don't have a whole lot of time left today, believe it or not. I think, folks, that in a couple of weeks, we're going to put up another podcast. And I think what we're going to do is take this a little bit deeper. We're going to talk about some of the things that Tevye or I might be teaching or doing, and how, you know, we're going to demystify some of this stuff. And actually, I think next time you should speak a little bit more. I'd like to hear a little bit about the Chinese language and how we may, you know, how do we interpret this stuff? Mm-hmm. Because they talk in characters, right? And also, I think we might want to talk about how mystical martial arts look on movies and how much of that really happens. Because I've watched you move and that kind of defies logic. Nobody should squat that low at your, you know, over 20. I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. So folks, come on back in a couple of weeks. We're going to talk a little bit more about Chinese culture. We're going to talk a little bit about kung fu fighting and... Mm-hmm. You know, all that kind of stuff. So I guess say goodbye, Tevye.
Okay, thanks for having me. I'll see you next time.
See, you're supposed to go. Okay, goodbye, Tevye.
Okay, goodbye, Tevye.
All right, guys, see you in a couple weeks. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us on another Empowerment Through Knowledge adventure. Want to learn more? Find Master Chia at MontaukChia.com. That's MANTAKCHIA.com. Find advanced learning materials, books, and more at SarinaStone.com. That's SARINASTONE.com. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you heard, please subscribe today. This podcast was produced by JC Warfield Productions in conjunction with the Echo Chamber Studio. Minneapolis, Minnesota.